The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of Need to Know. Tonight, I hope you all will indulge me because I think I have a subject that I'm not sure you need to know, but I really want you to know. Tonight's show is being done under difficult circumstances, to say the least, because I'm coming to you from outside Tampa, Florida, at a healthcare facility. I guess you could call it a nursing home, convalescent center. I'm not sure exactly what it's titled, but it's been home for the woman who brought me into the world all those years ago, my mother, for the last year and a half. And she has entered the stage of Alzheimer's, where not only has her memory and speech and motor skills declined immensely, as they have over the last 4 years, but now she is at the point where the end of her life is near. In fact, a woman of great faith, a priest came today, prayed over her, administered last rites. I mean, we are probably down to hours now instead of days that we hope for. And I come to you, of course, with the heaviest of hearts, but also, again, reminding you that this is a woman of great faith who spoke many times during her life about when her time comes, she doesn't want to linger. She doesn't want to be kept around through artificial means. She's still, although belabored, breathing on her own and appears to be able to hear, although there's no real recognition from her, or if anything is registering. You never know exactly in these situations, you know, what is going on in the deepest recesses of a person's mind or spirit. I'm always reminded, and I've told myself this several times during the last couple of years as things declined and got worse, that I remember the story. It was in a compilation of book by the great writer Gay Talese. And one of the stories was about former President Ronald Reagan before he was president. Ronald Reagan, a lot of folks maybe don't realize, in the 1920s was one of the top swimmers in the United States. He actually just missed qualifying for the Olympics. And so he was a world-class performer and continued to be an avid swimmer throughout his life. Reagan used to have, you know, all the family for a big reunion every year at their mansion in California. This, I think, was either right before or during the time he was governor of California. But there was always a lot of events, very competitive family. He had married Nancy Reagan, his second wife by this time, and their son, Ron Reagan Jr., who's still in the news from time to time. He's got some interesting views on a lot of subjects, not really following the exact mantra of his father. But Ron Reagan Jr. had gone off to college, and he also had a lot of aptitude as a swimmer, was actually swimming competitively for his school, and I don't remember where he was going to college. But he was home that summer, and the big race came. Ronald Reagan would always take on any challengers from the ranks of his family, probably well into his 50s by this time. And they had a large pool, and it was a lap up and a lap back. And Ronald Reagan powerfully was stroking with a slight lead as they got to the edge of the pool for the lap back. And all of a sudden, everyone was astonished when Ron Jr. Pulled ahead of him after they straightened back out and headed down the home stretch, for lack of a better term, to the other side in the finish line. Ronald Reagan tried to make up the difference, but could not, came up just short, and Ron Jr. had vanquished the great man, the first defeat ever dealt to Ronald Reagan in his pool, in his swimming competition. And Nancy Reagan described it in this story as everyone was so excited for Ronnie Jr., but the poor vanquished warrior emerged from the pool and looked kind of befuddled and defeated. And he asked, okay, what was going on there at the far end of the pool? How did you get around so quickly and get the lead? And he said, Dad, that's the new tactic that we've all learned in modern swimming. It's called the flip turn. And Ronald Reagan was befuddled. The flip turn, which of course is standard now in all swimming competitions. You don't have to touch the side, spin around, and push back off like you had to in the old days. Now, of course, you do a somersault, basically move, and your feet make contact with the end wall, and you twist around and just resume your stroke, and it saves several seconds in the process. And Ronald Reagan reportedly walked away mumbling and just astonished that a new technique in his kind of dinosaur approach to the sport had interceded and kind of flipped the fates. Years later, many years later, probably 35 years later, Ronald Reagan lay in his bed in kind of the same state my poor mom is in right now, completely robbed seemingly of all of his consciousness and his awareness, not able to communicate. It was debatable whether or not he could even hear what people were saying. And on an afternoon when there were five or six relatives present, Ron Jr. came to the house to pay a visit, as he did every couple of weeks, and talked to his dad and didn't get any response, really, and turned, gave him a kiss on the forehead and told him he was heading out and he'd be back and see him next week. And as he took a couple steps toward the door, everybody in the room heard this, and this was part of the story that's just astounding because, again, we think we know what is going on with someone, but we really don't. What can people hear? What are they aware of? What is still alive in their subconscious and in the recesses of their mind and heart? As he approached the door, everybody in the room heard Ronald Reagan, who had not really spoken any audible words in some time, just say clear as day, "Damn flip turn." Now think about that. Just hearing Ron Jr.'s voice brought his mind back to that day where he was vanquished by the flip turn. And reportedly, those are basically the only words he ever spoke in that process at the end when he declared, "Damn flip turn." So I am hopeful that in my communications with my mom today, where I have profusely thanked her and told her how blessed I was that she was my mother. There's not a more pure, loving, supportive person ever born. I know Lou Gehrig coined the phrase, but I told her today that I was going to borrow it because the fact that she was my mother and I was lucky enough to have that distinction of being her son, her firstborn, when she was a bright-eyed 21-year-old naive girl from the hills of West Virginia who had moved to the big city of Washington, D.C., and was quickly swept off her feet by my dad, William Kiefer, nicknamed by his friends Billy Dollar, a guy who was already worldly and experienced and had gotten around quite a bit. My mom, when she was still basically a baby, gave birth to me and gave me the opportunity in life. And I told her today that anything that I am that's worthwhile is because of her. And I mean that with all my heart, and I really hope that she heard it. So I use the Lou Gehrig line, He said upon his retirement at Yankee Stadium, after learning he had ALS, which is now the disease that carries his name, Lou Gehrig's disease, basically the opposite of this Alzheimer's scourge, because when you have ALS, you have total mental cognizance, but your body becomes inoperative. You can't will yourself to walk or wave or any function, where Alzheimer's, of course, ravages your mind, and eventually your body declines. But all of that added up, Lou Gehrig said, "I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth." And that's how I feel today, thinking back and looking down at the tiny shell that my mom is, been diminished by this disease. And I pray with all my heart. I know a lot of you have experienced this with your relatives and loved ones. I pray those who have not will never have to deal with this experience, because my mom has been really deprived for the last couple of years of clear thought and memory and even recognition of people around her, and it's insidious indeed. And she'd vocalized many, many times that she, at the end, did not want to be artificially kept around. She used to say, "Even if I'm alive, I'm not interested in just in not living." And it's resonated in my head. And as devastating as this chapter is, as I step out to talk to you here in the lobby, preparing to go back in, I am heartened by those words. And also the gestures. She's really not moving around much. She moans a little bit, and but lays pretty still and seems to be comfortable. But every couple of minutes, both her arms raise up straight up toward the heavens as if she's offering her hands or reaching for something. And spiritually, I want to believe, and I'm going to believe, that this is her way of offering herself, that she's ready to come home, or maybe she's being encouraged to do that. And this gesture is part of that situation. It's not a reflexive thing. You can see her making the effort to raise her arms up, and it's really the only gesture. Her eyes are open, but she pretty much just stares at the ceiling. She doesn't really, if you change your voice inflection or do anything, talk louder or softer, it really doesn't stir a reaction from her, although the doctor says she can hear. So I'm hopeful that that gesture we witnessed is something that is an indication that her trip to her Heavenly Father and all of the folks that have preceded her, she's the last of her family living. She had two sisters and two brothers. And of course, my younger brother, Charles, who we lost almost 5.5 years ago, they were so close. And the thought of them being reunited is a comforting thought. So I wanted to preface my remarks, and I want to transition to something that I think you do need to know if you don't already. And that is, I had a lot of time to think today, of course, and was wondering what people do that are in different circumstances. Now, our family is not wealthy by any stretch of the imagination. My mom, after getting a divorce from my father in 1970, basically educated herself and went from being a classic 1960s housewife to being a career woman. She got a job as a sales representative with a big company, and within a couple of years, she was promoted to a sales manager and given a territory based out of Norfolk, Virginia, and really had a very solid career in that stage of her life, and really proved a lot and kept us in the lifestyle that we were comfortable with, and did accrue a decent amount of savings and a lot of retirement benefits, of course, along with her Social Security and pension. So her circumstances now, to be in this nice facility, and it's not top shelf by any stretch, but it's very comfortable and very nice, and a very attentive staff. She's been cared for by a doctor provided by her benefits. He's come in a couple times a day. A nurse has been there regularly to dispense any kind of medications that she requires to ensure her comfort in these final stages. So all of those benefits are paying off for her. But I wonder, and in talking to my sister, who has lived down here and has been her primary caretaker for a number of years, my sister informed me today that her Medicare retirement benefits do not cover the cost of living at this facility the last year and a half. That money has come from her savings and her income, again, in her Social Security and pension money from her retirement from her company. And so it has cost a significant amount of the money that she accrued. And thank God she was in position to have that opportunity, because I can't help but have the query in my mind to wonder, what do people do in other circumstances? Where would they be for this? Where would they go? Are you at the end of Alzheimer's, when there's really nothing that can be done? I don't think you would be admitted to a hospital. Maybe hospice facilities. There have been some hospice employees here, and they are wonderful, positive, selfless people, and I have all the admiration in the world for them. But where would she be? And if you're not in a circumstance where you have adequate savings and or have family members that are able to facilitate this kind of care, what happens? Because all the things that you accrue in your life in terms of your benefits for retirement, I mean, how can there not be an allocation of funds to care for you if you get into this kind of situation? But she would have just been out of luck. You know, I guess she could have stayed at home and lingered at my sister's, who has a full-time job and would not have been able to care for her. I guess there could be workers that would, you know, with Alzheimer's, the person requires pretty much round-the-clock care and supervision. You know, she certainly couldn't be left alone during the day. It's just food for thought to make you wonder. You know, if this happens to you, with your mom or dad, or even yourself or your siblings or your children, you have to kind of think about, and I don't think people do enough. I know I didn't. Maybe I'm unusual that I don't go this direction of worrying what could happen, but you have to be prepared. And I know there's supplemental policies and other things, but I want to talk about health care real quick, because to watch television and see Joe Namath and Jimmy J.J. Walker and others, William Shatner, Captain Kirk, for God's sake, come on and tell you it's time to check and see what Medicare benefits you are eligible for, since I'm sure most of you are mindful that when you reach 65 years old, you are required by the federal government to sign up for Medicare and Social Security. Now, you're already gathering Social Security in your work career, and you don't have to take the benefits right away, but you have to be enrolled, or if you're not within 90 days, you are penalized, which is something I never understood until recently, and as I delve into more of the healthcare quandary. But the bottom line is, all these commercials you see with these guys begging you, and the most loathsome of those is William Devane, who was a character actor and showed up in a lot of TV series. He's been on for years hawking gold and silver as the ultimate investment, because your currency is soon going to be worthless. It's continually being devalued, and go ahead and trade in your soon-to-be worthless money, and we will fix you up with financial security by providing you all the gold and silver you want, and all you have to give us for it is some of that money that's soon going to be worthless. That really doesn't add up for me. I think William and the companies that he represents are snake oil salesmen. If currency is going to be completely devalued and worthless, why in the world are they so anxious to give up this valuable commodity that they apparently have plenty of to peddle and trade that for your worthless greenbacks. So anyway, that's just a sidebar of why I don't find him credible. But on the other hand, they come on and they talk about, call right now, you might be entitled to tons of benefits that you're not getting. And if you call and give us your zip code, which I never understood what that had to do with it, now I've been enlightened, and I'll tell you in just a moment why it matters. But I found out from talking to my sister, who's a degreed RN, registered nurse, about a lot of things that I've been wondering about. And one of those is, what is the federal government's incentive to have every other commercial urging you to sign up for these benefits that you have earned? It's basically your money. Why are they so anxious to get you on the rolls? And she enlightened me, and many of you may have known this, and I'm embarrassed that I didn't. But this is not the federal government directly soliciting your attention to sign up for Medicare and Social Security. These are private monster companies, and I won't name any of the names, but these are healthcare companies that have these giant networks and are contracted partners with the federal government to administer Medicare programs, which makes me scratch my head. People that call for socialized medicine, well, the government has the capacity to basically be doing that and provide the benefits that they collect throughout, but they basically send that off to a third party to take care of all the paperwork. And there's even an additional party, it was explained to me, that sometimes it's not even the healthcare providers that are pushing the big healthcare companies that are pushing this. It's third party kind of contract guys, you know, trying to solicit business that are affiliated as like sales branches and marketing branches for these gigantic healthcare concerns. So there is a profit motive, and that's what it is. And if you look at it carefully, you realize the whole bottom line of this is people over profits. But it's not, that's not what it is. It's just the opposite. It's profit over people. Because they're going to tell you that all these things that you have available to you are wonderful and splendid, and you need all these different kinds of coverages, and you need to upgrade, and et cetera, et cetera. And the zip code thing is because all of these big companies compete for territory and are given, you know, basically areas of the country by the federal government, and that's their turf. It's a lot like cable TV. You can't subscribe to a competitive cable company, even if their rates are better and they have more of the services you want, if you live in the area that has been delegated as the territory of the other company. It's the same thing in healthcare. That's why they're begging for your zip code to see if you're eligible for all these benefits, because if you're not in their zip code, they're going to say, oh, I'm sorry, you're not eligible for any of this. Thanks for calling. And they're done with you. My sister, back to the registered nurse, worked in a healthcare facility for the state of Florida for a number of years before stepping down probably 8 or 9 years ago and going to work for one of these gigantic healthcare concerns under the auspices of being a telehealth provider, where she would get a list of all kinds of patients, quote, clients, unquote, of these companies, and is supposed to do follow-up work to make sure that they're getting the services and that they're having the proper prescriptions filled. And it's supposedly like a sales service branch, but it was revealed to her pretty quick that the real job, what they really are pushing and what they really want her to do, despite her training as a nurse, not a salesperson, not a market representative, they want the people that call and check on these patients to try and, these are their words, and she says this is exactly the language they use. We need you to encourage them, gain confidence, and you know, help them with whatever that they ask you, but then try and upsell them to take on extra benefits, which of course means extra cost. And yeah, again, asking a nurse to be a salesperson and then giving demanding guidelines on the quotas for her performance, it really kind of pushes the limits of any kind of, you know, sanity when basically these healthcare providers that call on the phone to check on patrons, quote, clients, are actually being asked to be salespeople to try and increase the bottom line for these gigantic companies. There's just something really terribly wrong with that whole approach. And her biggest frustration is when people have real problems and she tries to go the extra step and call supervisors and get solutions, 9 times out of 10, she is denied because there are, you know, exceptions and loopholes and fine print in their coverage that prohibit them from getting things that they assumed would come with the things they signed up for. So again, they have no regard for the people and the clients of their concerns. All they are looking for is the ultimate profit. And if something like that costs them an extra quarter, they're going to deny those requests. So my sister is at the end of her rope. She's just about had enough because they're terrorizing her all the time that she's not making her quotas, she's not selling enough, and she's not contacting enough people. They give her lists that are impossible. You have to be on the phone 24 hours a day to even come close to calling everybody they expect you to call. And if you spend any time actually listening to customers and trying to fulfill their requests, the calls take a long time. She says sometimes she's on the phone with people for like an hour. So it's not working out, and I'm hoping that her frustration level has reached the point where maybe she's going to go a different direction here and tell them, in the words of Johnny Paycheck, take this job and shove it. But I think it's important, if you didn't know a lot of these facts, and again, I apologize because I pride myself on knowing as much as possible. I didn't know about a lot of these things, and it's really kind of shook me to the core. In the meantime, as I watch my mother suffer from the advanced stages and the end of Alzheimer's, I just read an article about a week ago that popped up on my news feed about some breakthrough discovery they've made and researched how to deal with Alzheimer's. I don't think they really have a definitive idea of what causes it or what exacerbates it, what brings it on, and sure as hell have not figured out a way to treat it. And Alzheimer's is not new on the scene. This has been going on for a long time. And I'm sorry if I sound like a cynic, but I think I have to ask the question, and I hope you wonder about the same thing. All of this money that we're always called on to contribute to all of these various diseases and terrible things that afflict people, is there ever any breakthroughs, any solutions? Maybe there are subtle things that are reached, but maybe I'm jaded and again cynical, but I feel like the whole research industry is more to build bigger and better facilities and strengthen the bottom lines of the concerns that are involved in that and to make a lot of Porsche payments. I can't help but feel that way when I can remember as a small child the Jerry Lewis Telethon for muscular dystrophy. And every year they would collect tens of millions of dollars and all these research benefits are on the brink of happening. And here we are 5 decades later, and have there been huge advances, or am I just clueless? Because it sure looks like to me that the research business is bigger and stronger and better than ever, and is it really accomplishing anything? I think all of us need to put the whole healthcare industry and all of its off branches, including all of the research and fundraising that seems to be the biggest part of the industry, and really take a hard look at it as a society. And I know people will say, well, it's amazing, you're the ultimate market capitalist guy, and now you're condemning them for being a big, you know, cash cow booming industry. But the problem is the solution the left has about socialized medicine, the government already contracts that out to third and fourth parties. So again, the government isn't equipped. The government is not good at anything. Let's just face it. We had a Chinese spy balloon fly from one corner of the country to the other that was uninterrupted, collecting who knows what kind of data, and there was no action taken. So again, on our defenses, on our border security, on all of our now $31 trillion debt, government sucks at everything that they put their fingers in. And I think it's pretty glaringly apparent to anybody who gives it any advanced thought. We're out of time. Thank you so much for indulging me on a lot of this. I was prepared to talk about political issues and life interceded. And in this case, sadly, death interceded. And I appreciate you allowing me to share some of these feelings. It's therapeutic for me to talk about it, and I hope there were some things that you weren't aware of that we brought you up to speed on, again, to keep with our theme, You Need to Know. Thank you, everybody. We'll be back next week. I'm Kip Kiefer. God bless each and every one of you.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.